This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. And this episode of Something Rather Than Nothing is being recorded on occupied native lands in the state of Oregon, in the city of Albany that belonged to the Kalapuya tribe.
You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Here to welcome Claire Zwicker, teacher, beadwork artist. Claire, glad to welcome you to the program.
Hi, Ken. Thank you so much, Anine. I just wanted to say that I'm recording in Te Karanto, which is the Mohawk term for the place where the trees stand in water. And they are the traditional lands of the Huron-Wendat, the Seneca, and the Mississaugas of the Credit River. And I'm actually going to attempt to give my introduction in Anishinaabe Mohin. Bizania Washkeshwe Nindijnakaz, Webineshi Nindodem, and Minjikining Nindonjaba. So what I said there was, my name is Peaceful Deer Lady, I'm of the Martin Clan, and I'm from the Minjikining First Nation, or Williams Treaty Territory. A little bit more about me, as Ken said, I am a teacher, a bead worker. I'm a student, actually, right now. I'm taking my Master's of Education in Social Justice Work at the University of Toronto.
Well, Claire, that's where you are now within the program. A lot of times we go back and just try to find out, you know, both, you know, with your interest in education and your interest in art and in your beadwork. Mm-hmm. Can you mention or talk a little bit about what you were like when you were younger and whether you were always interested in art, or is that something that developed over time?
Yeah, so I guess I've always been coloring and drawing and painting, like, you know, a lot of children do. But I actually started more out in sports. My parents, when they realized how much energy I had, they actually put me in gymnastics. And I feel like a lot of people don't know this about me right now because it's not really on my social media, but I've been a gymnast since the age of 3, and as early as the age of 9 was in the gym training close to 30 hours a week. So I didn't actually have much time for creating or other things, because it would be, I would go to school every day and then I would come home, have a snack, and then I would go off to training until like literally 8:30 p.m. at night, and then I would come home and do my homework, eat dinner, and then go to bed, wake up, and do it all over again. So I think sport actually consumed the first half of my youth, and then it wasn't until really high school where I was like, do I only ever want to be doing gymnastics? Like, I didn't really get the chance to socialize with my peers because I didn't have time. Like, Friday evenings, Saturday mornings, I would be training. So I took a break from gymnastics, actually, for about 3-4 years. And that's when I really started to explore just other areas, and art was one of them. And I took art all throughout high school. And yeah, that's kind of where my love from art came from, as well as through, I guess, my family too. My grandmother draws, my uncle can draw. And the other side of art, which would be music, I've been surrounded by music my whole life, essentially. My mom is a singer and guitar player, so is my brother. My sister sings and plays piano, and so did my grandfather and my uncle. So I think I have always been surrounded by art, but it's just always taken on different forms, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and great to hear about, you know, some of the other background and the, you know, the energies and that you had, your parents, you know, with your energy said, okay, gymnastics. I was thinking running, gymnastics or running, you know, for you when when you were younger. Tell us about your work, your bead work, and how you came to that, and just your practice around that, learning that, developing that that art.
Yeah, well, it actually has been a very recent journey from me. Just a few years ago, my sister taught me how to bead my first pair of earrings. And it's actually funny because out of my mom, my sister, and my brother, I'm the last one to learn how to bead, and they're younger than me. So yeah, my sister really got me into it because she has been kind of into art and beadwork longer than I have. And then from there, you know, because I'm in university, I have I have access to all these amazing programs through school, and especially programs that are being put on by, you know, Indigenous centers now at universities. So one of my colleagues brought her aunt in to do a beading workshop where we learned how to bead medallions. And, you know, when I beaded my first one, it felt so natural to me. And I'm so used to, I guess, exerting energy or, you know, finding calmness through sport. But, you know, I learned through beading that I could find a kind of like inner peace through creating as well. And it came quite natural to me, right? And this is where we talk about, you know, blood memory. Like, what is blood memory? Well, it felt like I had been beading my whole life, you know, because I've been taught that when we're born with all the knowledge of our ancestors, you know, it runs through our blood. So, so since then, that was when I started my master's, actually. So 2 years ago, I really started to pick up beading more. And then I wanted to share it with more people. And so I put on a beading workshop at school, you know, to teach other Indigenous students. Because I just wanted to share what I had known, even if it's just a small amount right now. I don't really call myself an artist or see myself as, you know, a bead worker. It's just something that I do because it brings me joy. It brings me peace. And that's kind of how I like to look at my work.
Yeah, and I know that, well, the thing is, now that you're on the podcast and the artist podcast, you're both, you know, that's that, so.
Yeah, you're an artist now.
yeah, that's, you know, that does it. I know that you have a deep love of literature, you know, learning, you know, social justice and, you know, connection to your people and some of the influences as far as your discussion around doing the bead work. Do you have particular, you know, outside of your family, artistic influences in either of those realms or artists that really kind of compel you to create?
Yeah, definitely. The first one that comes to mind would be Chief Lady Bird or Nancy King. Chief Lady Bird is her art name, but she's actually from the same reserve as I am. And she has quite the following on social media, so I don't think her name will come as a surprise to anybody. But I like her, just the way she views art, in the way that in our culture, we don't, like in Anishinaabemowin, we don't have a word for art. I think that was, you know, created by Europeans as, you know, something as a label that we don't really, we don't have a word for it. So she has, you know, when we've talked before about art, she talks about how she creates and what she creates comes from her heart. It comes from the land. It comes from her ancestors, and it comes from spirit. So that's kind of how I view my art as well, is that I don't ever bead with any intention or plan. I just, what I bead what I feel. Whatever, yeah. I'm feeling that day, or if I'm beading for someone, I bead with their spirit and mind, and, you know, and what colors come to me when I think of them. And another artist that has the same kind of philosophy around art is Monique Aura. And I've done some paint workshops through school, and, you know, they are really much about the same thing, like not calling themselves an artist, and saying that they are a creator of things, or they're a visual storyteller. And they also taught me a lot about how to let go of perfectionism in creating, because I think that's been a huge barrier for me with why I don't do a lot of painting or drawing anymore, is because I feel like I need to create this perfect image of something. And I take so long to do things because I have this like pressure to perform that, you know, was bred through me basically as a gymnast. So I really appreciate their teachings and letting expectations go, essentially, and just creating for yourself, for your spirit.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned as far as with the sport and of course, with gymnastics, right? I mean, you want to land the 10.0, right? Land the 10.
Yes. Right? Yes. That was the old system, but it's still the same. Like everything you do, like every tiny thing, they are watching you and they're taking away points. It's not even a positive system that lifts you up. It's like, oh, you had a flexed foot or a bent knee, like we're taking points away from you.
And that's probably been part of the mental thread that you've had to work with on the perfectionism,
yeah,
as you mentioned. Definitely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I was wondering, Claire, if you could mention, you know, with the, everybody's talking about 2020, you know, very negatively. Yeah. And I think yeah, the history of 2020 is more complicated with a lot of positive developments amongst the negative as well. But, for you as a person, you as an artist, I talked to a lot of artists and they feel that either there's more pressure or maybe question, like, why am I doing art? Why am I creating things? You know, right, where a lot of people asking these type of questions. And for you, what do you think the role of art, you know, pandemic, you know, racial protests, other fractures and changes in society, do you think art has a different role right now, or is it just kind of what you go back to like you have? How does it feel for you?
Honestly, art, or, you know, beading, has been really healing for me in this time. I'm a very anxious person and I don't like inconsistency. And that is, you know, with the pandemic, things have been very inconsistent. I was, you know, out of a job for a while, and beading was really the only thing I had to keep me sane, because, I was running at the beginning of the pandemic, but I actually broke my ankle. So then I wasn't able to, you know, get my energy out through that way. And that's one of my coping mechanisms. So I turned to beadwork, and I actually created my business during the pandemic. And it's been my only source of income. And I think that it's brought me so many beautiful things. It's brought me like this online community that are beyond my wildest dreams, because before, you know, growing up, and especially on social media, there's all these negative representations and stereotypes of Indigenous peoples. And, you know, in education and social media, I never saw myself or my culture reflected back at me, and until now, really, until I found this whole universe of, you know, other indigenous creators online, and it blows me away the things that are happening, and the resilience, really, all of us continuing our practices and the things that bring us joy and the things that, you know, bring us together, and especially in disrupting racism. You know, we all know that with the pandemic, it affects marginalized populations more than non. So, and you see with even the images now, with, you know, I see a lot of indigenous peoples painting these gorgeous masks, and that, you know, that itself is a representation and a message, you know, to protect our communities, to protect our people. So in a lot of cases, I see the pandemic bringing, you know, people closer together, even though it's online. And yeah, like you said, like, you know, it's been up and down. It's been negative and positive. There's been a lot of death. It's been a lot to process. And, you know, a lot of people might think like, oh, well, like, why are you stressed? You're just at home, like, doing nothing, essentially. Like, you know, you shouldn't have a care in the world right now. But right, I think the opposite is true, in that, you know, like, I am worried for my community, especially my Afro-Indigenous kin, you know, and everything coming up in the media with Black Lives Matter and police violence, and how many, and just, like, realizing how many Indigenous and Black lives we lose on a daily basis. And art is just one of the ways, you know, one of the tools we use to share our voices.
Yeah, and I think that's so well put, as far as, you know, the art that's coming out. And it doesn't have to be like strictly like protest art, but it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Because everybody ends up impacted by large events. Most everybody ends up impacted by large events. And then there's this shifting in adaptation. And it can be fascinating and scary what's depicted. But like you had said, as far as with your beading, I mean, sometimes we think of art in the sense of what you produced and what goes into the market and what has value in the market, when for the artist, you know, you doing the beadwork, the therapy and the medicine is there, and there's this other piece to it, but it's just serving different purposes.
That's why we have the hashtag beading is medicine. But yeah, I think if you look at art historically, or art relating to Indigenous peoples, we're either non-existent, like not present from art. Like in Canada, we have like famous artists like Emily Carr or the Big Seven, who paint these images of Canada as this empty, vast wilderness, and this idea that Indigenous peoples never existed, that Europeans came to this, you know, empty land for settling. And I think I'm seeing a lot now, especially around the topic of land and art and representations of land in art by Indigenous peoples that counter that narrative, that counter that trope that Canada or Turtle Island was a vast emptiness for the taking. And lost my train of thought.
No, I was thinking about the intersectionality of, in part of when I talked to Jordan Marie Brings Three White Horses Daniel a few episodes back, and I told her, I mean, she mentioned during the episode where she was talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women, but in a very short order, like, I began to understand how it was connected to water rights, to fracking, to questions about land use, to, you know, and all these, it was all collected there. And I didn't see how all that happened. And I followed up with her and said, oh, wait a second. It's this piece, and that piece. And I think that's where it ties deep, deep into the history. And I know you've had, I know you've been involved in some of that work. I got a question here that you might have gotten at, but I don't want to assume your answer.
Mm-hmm.
Who or what made you who you are?
This question is it's difficult because to pin it down to one thing, you know, I can't really, but I would say, like, it's just been my experiences and, you know, the people that surround me. My mom is a huge influence on me, my family, you know, my brother, my sister, teachers I've had. I would say my most recent teachers, because in my master's, I've been so lucky to work with a number of Indigenous professors. Because that was something I didn't have growing up. I didn't have Native teachers. And definitely my community, and I say community and it's such a broad term, but, you know, I think we have many communities, you know, one of mine being the urban Native Indigenous population in Toronto. That's a community to me. And my reserve, like, I didn't grow up there, but that's a community to me, and I have deep familial ties there. And a lot of my work stems from my communities and my mom. And, you know, I try to carry on the work of my ancestors, basically. And I think that is a lot of what makes me who I am. And I think what also makes me who I am is my spirit name, which I mentioned earlier. And it's also my Instagram handle, Peaceful Dear Lady.
What does that mean to you? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually been a lifelong journey of figuring out what that name means, because it's not like my elder ever, you know, elders, when they tell stories, they don't explain something to you. They tell you a story and you're meant to, you know, interpret it in your own way, essentially. And I was gifted this name when I was about 10 or 12 years old. And at the time, like, we visited my reserve. We went to powwows every year, but I didn't understand the sacredness of this name or the weight that it carried. You know, so it's been a journey of just trying to figure out, like, okay, what does this name mean? And what does this name, you know, mean to me? How am I representing my people, like, through this name? And I think a lot of Native youth struggle with this disconnection, you know, that so many of us have because of colonial policies like the Indian Act. So many of us, like, don't have Native names and don't know, like, how sacred they are. And what these names really are is they actually are represent our purpose in life and our gifts, and that we each bring a gift to the world. We each have a responsibility to our community. We all have a role to play. And I see what's happening with a lot of youth, and it's a bit of my history as well, is that for a time, I didn't know who I was. I mean, that's obviously a common thing for youth, but it was like in my early 20s where I really was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't, like, know what my purpose is. I felt, like, so unworthy. Like, I really didn't know what I had to bring to the world. You know, I went down this dark path of suicide. And, you know, that's another common thing in our communities. well, Native communities. And I think what's missing is this, our connection, our language, our culture, our traditions, that these are the things that tell us who we are. We're missing these things. And so my name is like everything to me, because when I really realized that what it was and that it was meant to lead me on my path, I understand now that, okay, I'm meant to be where I am, and I'm meant to be doing what I'm doing. Like, to me, Peaceful Deer Lady, you know, it's just to me is to walk in a good way. And I carry the gifts of the deer, which, you know, deer are brave, and deer are giving. They give them their whole selves to, you know, their bodies, essentially, for us to live, for people to live. You know, in Indigenous peoples, we use every part of the deer. And so being in a caring position or a caring field like education, I found myself like giving too much of myself away. And so to me, I have to remember to give some things back to myself to keep that inner peace, so that I'm able to share that joy with other people.
Yeah, the peaceful part of it too, of being reflexive, not just towards the outside, but peaceful towards yourself, right? Peaceful towards you remaining intact, because you have to, mm-hmm. right, in your role.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for that. And you know, just as about identity, you know, in who we are, and mm-hmm. you know, naming, right, how important that could be, particularly for cultures or the history where people don't control the language and they control the name, right? I think that's pivotal. Yeah, again, thanks for that. You're a big reader and thinker. Prior to getting a couple more scripted questions, what important books do readers have to look at and listen to right now? Stuff that you've encountered recently, authors and mm-hmm. thinkers.
Well, the author that started this whole connection between you and I was Leanne Simpson, and her new work, Nupaming, The Cure for White Ladies. I actually haven't read it yet, but I've read some of her other work, and I've met her in person, and I'm going to put her work out into the world and say that I think her work is pivotal for Indigenous peoples to read, because it's that thing that I said, it's like culture being reflected back at you. When she writes with spirit, and she writes using the language. So she uses Anishinaabe Mohen with English in her writing. And I think when I read her work, it was the first time that I'd ever felt seen by anything that I've read before. And another one that I've been reading and trying to get through is Alicia Elliott's Mind Spread Out on the Ground. And the reason why I say trying to get through it is because so often I need to put it down and take a breath, because it's so heavy. There's like this realness and heaviness to it of about the realities of being an Indigenous person, and not just Indigenous, but a white passing Indigenous person, and how she just is, I think, how she was seen as a young kid, like how other kids didn't really understand her, or she never fit into either group, because she was both Indigenous and white. And a lot of the time throughout my life, like that's how I felt, like trying to find this, you know, negotiating different spaces. And I think that's really where a lot of Indigenous peoples are trying to come to, like, who we are, without having to make sacrifices for other people. Like, I don't want to make sacrifices for other people anymore around who I am. And that's kind of what I'm learning through these authors. And, I think.
Yeah. The Leanne, Simpson, I'm about a quarter of the way through the book, and the energy in her.
Yeah.
It's difficult to describe. I mean, there's some books I would say I literature is my first love, always will be. There's certain writers where this might sound silly, but what they've written and what they're writing on the page seems barely to be contained in the book.
Yes,
you know what I mean? Like,
that's
a brilliant
description of it. It's alive. Like,
it is.
Yeah, the words transcend the page, and that's how I try to write as well, especially in academic spaces. I'm trying to transcend this, like, idea of what, like, an academic research paper is, and that also comes through reading just different books or different literature on Indigenous research and Indigenous research methods, and what does it mean to research, and what does it mean to do it in an Indigenous way. And I think that is something that I've learned from, that's come out or been the same in all these, across all these texts, is that, like, as Indigenous peoples, we bring, like, our being to our work. So whether it's, like, beadwork, drawing, painting, writing, we bring our full selves. And so it's so important that we're well, because if we're not, like, if my spirit isn't feeling well, I can't create. I won't bead or I won't write. And I think that's really hard for non-Indigenous peoples to understand, like, especially teachers, when they're not understanding of why Indigenous students are late on assignments. Well, first of all, a lot of the stuff we're writing about is personal to us, because we write about what's personal. So, and a lot of that has to do with our pain, colonialism and trauma, and just what it takes to read about colonialism and write about colonialism, or just basically re-experiencing trauma through our work and trying to heal through it. I don't know.
That work in I think that's the part of it with art for me, and I've learned a lot from your comments. It's both, like, in the creation of the art or the experience of an art and what you can do, like, when you have to put the book down, being like, super important, this book speaks directly to me, but I am processing trauma and pain, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. Because especially the realities of these books are, you know, the realities of our own lives as Indigenous peoples, because we all experience similar trauma.
Well, and I think part of the art, well, again, I know you early on, you had mentioned as far as, you know, like, the term art or whether that fits. Mm-hmm. And whatever the term is for it, it's just this way of getting at that story and narrative. And I think with Simpson's book, like, yes, I'm not going to be able to connect with certain aspects of the immediacy for the culture, but I talk about just the deep spirit and humanity of what's being expressed right there. It's very accessible for everybody. And I think we just end up getting kind of cut into, like, demographics of, you know, should a 48-year-old white cis male American enjoy this book? Hell yeah. Right. And it doesn't stick out, you know, as much. But I think some of our experiences within reading are quite similar. Claire Zwicker, Peaceful Dear Lady, I believe you may have an answer for why is there something rather than nothing.
I feel like I've kind of already touched on this, but yeah, it comes down to, for me, just knowing my place in life and knowing that, you know, I am worthy, or that I have something to give. I have something to share. I have gifts. And that is something. You know, we have voices, we have histories, we have things to share, things to say. Well, yeah. It's funny because I've thought a lot about this question. And I do like to have philosophical conversations. And I try to think of it in terms of, you know, our culture, and that, you know, things are alive, and the way we see the world, and that everything's connected. And how would it be possible for there to be nothing when we have all of these, like, billions of connections between organisms and the universe?
Yeah. No, I mean, you got it.
Great.
No, you got it. No, we have the answer in there. It's there. Claire, I was wondering if you could share with the audience ways to connect with you, your work, in any way that you're comfortable with and you'd like to share with the audience.
Yeah, so they can actually connect with me through my Instagram, which is Peaceful Dear Lady Creations. I don't have a website right now. I'm just selling through my Instagram because I've just started. It's been just a short journey, just a few months. I started at the beginning of the pandemic, like I said. So, and I'm doing all these other things on the side. I'm a teacher. I'm writing my master's thesis. So, yeah, that's really where I post all of my things, is my Instagram. Or they can email me at claire.zwicker. So Zwicker is Zwicker94 at gmail.com.
Yeah, and you said Zed for an American audience, that is Z.
Right.
I've done that after I've been in England and held on to that word and then said it. And it's like, I gotta tell you, Claire, it's been great chatting with you and meeting you and just learning about, you know, learning a lot. And I do say that I do this show and I listen closely and I learn a lot. And I just wanted to, you know, mention here at the end, I've appreciated, you know, your thoughts and you as a person, as an artist, and really just wanted to thank you for taking, I know you mentioned all your various things that you're doing. I know you're super busy, but wanted to thank you for, you know, taking the time and sharing with the audience about your art and about yourself.
Yeah, no, it was great chatting with you, Ken, and I'm very thankful for this opportunity. So big Jimmy Gwetch to you, and I want you to be well.
You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing.